We're doing Navi. We're in the book of Shmuel. David has taken down Goliath, and Saul has seen David walking with a regal gait. And so he asks his chief general, Avner, his relative, who's that kid? Who's his father? In his bouts of depression, he couldn't remember. And Avner says, I swear, I don't know. So they ask, and David says, I'm the son of Yishai from Beit Lechem. His father's famous. Everywhere his father goes, he has flocks following him, listening to him. His father's 400 years old, one of the pious people of the generation. So, wow, everyone's impressed. And Shaul's son, Yonatan, gets so excited and develops a huge relationship with David. Remember, David's a young man. He's close to 30. He's in his late 20s. Yonatan is also a father of kids. And our story continues. But here, our sages say that, in fact, a whole conversation took place here. When Shaul asked, whose son is he? Shaul was asking, I know he's from the tribe of Yehuda. Does he come from Peretz or Zarah? Yehuda had two children from Tamar. One was called Peretz, which means to breach forward. And the other one was called Zarah, which means to shine forward. So Shaul said, if he is a descendant of Peretz, so that's the nature of a king. He breaks forth anywhere he has to go. You break a path and let him in. If he's a descendant of Zarah, so then that's the nature of nobles, to shine, but they don't break boundaries. Nobles, they shine within the boundary. So he asks, who is he a descendant of? Peretz or Zarah? Because he looks like he's fit for a king. And I want to know if he's a real threat to my monarchy. And standing there is David's nemesis, Doeg. And Doeg says, remember Doeg? Where do we encounter him? We encountered Doeg.
Many times he was the one that told King Shaul about not killing Agog.
Right? He's the one who convinced Shaul not to kill out Amalek. Where else did we encounter Doeg?
The one that puts down Doeg.
Right? When Shaul is looking to hire someone to play the harp by him, so he tells him all these nice words about David to get him to be jealous of David. So Doeg says, now Doeg was the Abira Roim, he was head of the court, he was a top rabbi. Doeg says, before you ask his family, why don't you ask if he's fit to marry into the Jewish people? He's a descendant of Ruth the Moabite. So Avner, who's standing there, says, only the male Moabites were prohibited. So Doeg said, ah, really? That's how you learn the verse? So then maybe only the male mamzerim? Maybe when the Torah prohibits a bastard from marrying into the Jewish people, only males should be prohibited? So he says, no. By the Moabites, it says that God doesn't let them marry into the Jewish people because they did not come and offer us bread and water. They boycotted us. So men were supposed to offer us, to sell us bread and water. That's not held against the women. And so women, Moabites, are allowed to marry into the Jewish people. So Doeg says, well, that if that's the logic, then the men should have sold to men, and the women should have sold to women. No one sold to no one, so you shouldn't let anyone marry in. And so David shouldn't be allowed into the Jewish people because he is a descendant of the female Ruth. Avner didn't know what to answer. His tradition was that the female Moabites are permitted, but he didn't know the logic. He didn't know what to say. So that's why Shaul says, Ben mi ze ha'alem. Alem really means a young boy, but alem comes from the word ne'elam, hidden. He says, you guys have this halacha hidden from you. Ben mi ze ha'alem. Whose descendant is he? This is alem, this is hidden. No one knows whether halachically he should be permitted into Israel or not. Go ask the courts, go verify. So this question remained hanging over David for a while. But there was a discussion. Shmuel said, my tradition is that Ruth was permitted to marry into the Jewish people, and David is kosher. Obviously, Boaz, the head of the high court, married her, so obviously it was kosher. But you'll notice that that wasn't accepted proof. Meaning when they're discussing whether a Moabite is permissible to marry into the Jewish people, so Avner doesn't retort and say, but Boaz married her, what's your question? The chief rabbi married her, obviously it's kosher. We're dealing halacha, prove it.
Why is that not proof?
So that deserves a broad discussion. It's a good question, but the answer is very long. It's in a nutshell, in a generation that can derive halachos from the Torah, you have to prove it from the Torah.
Not in that generation.
That generation passed towards the destruction of the Second Temple. They lost the skill. But that's the answer in a nutshell. It's more broad and more deep, but for now that'll have to suffice. Okay, back to our story. So, Yonatan makes a pact with David, and skip the page. Yonatan gives him his coat and his sword and even his bow, which was the hallmark of the tribe of Benjamin. They were excellent marksmen. He gives him his belt. He makes a real pact with David. And Shaul appoints him one of his generals. And everyone likes him. Now something happens when they return from war that really hurts Shaul. The women go out dancing and they sing a song. And they say, Saul killed thousands, David killed tens of thousands. And when Shaul hears this, he gets really upset. He says, the way they're talking about him, there's almost nothing left for him to become king. They give him greater honor than me. And from that day onward, the Navi says, Shaul hated David. He was plotting to kill David from that day onward. Yes? I didn't hear.
Is this a test for Shaul HaMelech? This whole thing, is it a test for Shaul HaMelech? Because, I mean, I'm not a king, and I've never been in such a situation where I killed 1,000 men. I can understand such a thing would quite trip someone up. He does feel like a bit absurd, like you said. Is it a test for the king? Was that a test for him? Did he fail the test? Was he meant to fail?
One of my rabbeim once pointed out that we don't find in the Tanakh, and we don't find in the Midrashim, that it was held against Shaul that he kept chasing David. Even though, technically, David was in the right, but it must have been a decree from above that David should be on the run. The Midrash Tanchuma says in Parashas Shmos, that when Izebel wanted to kill Eliyahu, so Eliyahu started praying. So God said, what you praying for? Run! Yeah?
Wow.
No, it's not the Midrash Tanchuma. It's the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. The Midrash Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says that God said to Eliyahu, he said, when Moshe was in danger from Pharaoh, he ran, so he lived. When Yaakov was in danger from Esav, he ran, so he lived. When David was in danger from Saul, he ran, so he lived. What do you learn from that? Run, and you'll live. Get out of here, Elio. What you standing around praying for? You got to run, and then you'll live. So we see that sometimes in a person's life, Hashem gives them a challenge, and the way to deal with the challenge is run.
Was that the whole Midrash?
Oh, it's a little longer than that. I'm quoting an excerpt.
Did they mention something about Caleb Ben Yefune?
No.
He was in a similar situation where...
Why did he have to run? Where did Caleb run? As a spy?
The splitting of the sea.
He didn't run from something. Here they're running for a long period. Here they're running from an enemy that wants to kill them. It doesn't seem that Shaul was wrong. Shaul saw a threat to his kingdom, and he was right. David was a threat. You see, David ultimately usurped him. God backed David, but that doesn't mean that Shaul was wrong. God didn't tell Shaul, rescind your kingship. You see, when David's kingdom was divided, when his grandson, Rehavam, lost 10 of the 12 tribes, so God sends a prophet to Rehavam and tells him, don't attack. I told them to take away 10 tribes. Yeravam is legitimately taking the 10 tribes and Rechavam doesn't attack. I'm saying when God tells him, I said so, so that shows us the piety of Rechavam. So Rechavam accepts it. I'm saying here, that God doesn't tell Saul, leave David alone, I told him.
He doesn't get punished. He has no
record. I'm telling you, I don't know the Shas. I don't know all the Midrashim. I don't even know the Tanakh that well. And I'm quoting you my Rabbeim. That's why I quoted, because I wouldn't know enough to say such a line. Yeah.
Was this generation knowledgeable in the Torah?
Yes.
I don't know. It was just like the concept, you know, from what we see about how important Torah study is. And that, you know, every moment wasted could have been spent learning Torah is a waste or even maybe even a sin. They praise David for killing tens of thousands. Compared to the thousands by Shaul, that they're not saying that David learned 10,000 halachos in an hour, and that Shaul learned 1,000 or whatever. They're not saying that. But I feel that that's like somehow deserves explanation. That you know, the generation that is knowledgeable in Torah, all the more so that they should have said, you know, that how do you know. You know, think of like today, how we praise our like the leaders of our generation. Don't say that so and so was a soldier in the IDF or whatever, and our great people and stuff. Yeah, then I came up with their Torah wisdom or something. It'd be so great.
Can we discuss this on Thursday? I want us to cover ground. It's a good question. Let's defer it.
Yeah. I have another question for
that. You want to mention it now, or you can? Yes.
He raises his hand first. There's a chutzpah to say, you said you're not, you're going to answer this and take care of this another time. You need to put a bit of ointment on it. Is that a chutzpah to go?
What? Huh?
Are you trying to start a fight with the rabbi?
You guys want to say, I'm listening. Let me ask a question. Wait, we'll see what the group wants. My goal with this class was to cover 5 chapters a week. We have this class once a week. And this way, by Purim time, my goal was to have finished through Kings, all the stories of the first prophets, and then move on from there, Purim and Pesach, etc. Every time you guys ask excellent questions, and I barely cover a chapter. I don't mind having an in-depth class. First of all, I have to switch the label online from quick profit classes. But if that's what the Tzibur wants, let's take a vote. How many people want us to go in-depth? And then I'll try to address your question. How many people want us to go in-depth?
Why can't we just read it on our own time if we want to?
I'm trying to give midrashim as I go through it, but I think you. And how many people want us to go quickly? And the rest of you who aren't voting, the rest of you who aren't voting. So again, how many people want us to go in depth?
I was broad.
And how many people want us to go quickly? Okay, so quickly when.
Huh?
Okay, so we'll defer questions Thursday night, guys. Write them down. We'll get there, because otherwise I don't see us even finishing 3 chapters.
Keep in mind that when
right,
we're
so finished, so let's finish 5 chapters, and then you guys can ask whatever questions you have. Okay, well, our goal is to finish 5 chapters, and then you'll ask. Yes, what's your real quick question? Yeah.
It seems like if you're saying that generation was more connected to the Torah in the past, and they could derive it, but now our generation, we can't. I always never liked those kind of ideas, because it would seem like Hashem was just sleeping for 2,000 years. And now all of a sudden we're at such a low level, you know, like what has he been doing for 2,000 years? Doesn't he make people? Doesn't he make? I mean, he made a covenant with us. He has to be working with us. He has to be constantly. It's got to be getting better and better.
It's getting worse and worse. What's the problem?
I didn't say it was getting worse and worse. I said in this realm, we're not where they were, right? There are other realms. We'll discuss it. I didn't answer. I said I didn't discuss it. Well, Thursday night, Ariel, we'll see you there. We'll see you Thursday night. Okay. Are we moving forward? Are we okay? Yes?
Let's do this. Let's go. It's good.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, it's interesting to note that the Navi points out it was the women's song that caused this great enmity between Shaul and David. The next morning, Shaul is having a fit, saying things that are indiscernible, going around the house, acting like a madman. And David is playing music, trying to calm Shaul down. This shows us a little bit of David's humility. The morning after, he's the great war hero. He's there playing music for the king again to try and calm him down. And Shaul grabs his spear and says to himself, I'll knock it through David in the wall. And every time he charges at David with the spear, David just bends forward and plays the harp, and the spear hits the wall and not David. So the first time he figures coincidence, David doesn't even notice what happened. Second time, Shaul comes charging, and at the final moment, David leans forward as he's playing with the harp, and the spear hits the wall. And again, David doesn't even notice, but God saved him from the hands of death in the split second. And Shaul gets scared. He sees, wow, God's looking out for this kid. And me, he's not with me anymore. So Shaul asks to have David removed. He doesn't want him there playing music. And he appoints him as a general over 1,000 men. And David leads the war. Every time they go to war, he's in front of his 1,000 men. Yes.
When it comes to tzaddikim, to the best of my knowledge, they aren't too envious of what other people have. If you take like a lower level tzaddik, I don't know, even like Rabbi Avadi Yosef, he never said, hey, that guy has more than me. Like, and this guy is like a lot bigger than that, and he's jealous to the point that he wants to kill somebody.
Okay, so here the Navi purposely tells us it was a special spirit from Hashem. Hashem caused Shaul to be afflicted with a special type of depression, what we would call today depression, and it isn't held against Shaul. He did the best he could given the circumstances. Again, the Navi describes, Vatitzlach ruach Elokim ra'a el Shaul. God placed an evil spirit on Shaul, and that's possibly why this wasn't held against him. This is attempted murder, and David did nothing wrong. So how come we don't find that this is held against David, held against Shaul? So it certainly seems to indicate that this was what we might call today temporary insanity. But real temporary insanity. not a claim. I'm saying the Navi describes it as God's evil spirit was on him.
Evil spirit?
It says Ruach Ra'ah, Ruach Elokim Ra'ah. You could call it bad, you could call it evil. It's difficult to know how to translate that word. So David is highly successful. And Shaul sees that whatever David does, he's successful, so he's even more scared of him. So everyone's liking David because he's leading them at war, and this is unnatural. Ordinarily, when a person is very successful, so people don't like him so much. People look badly upon it. And even Shaul's generals are happy with David, which was, again, unnatural. Ordinarily, people don't like their competition. As pious as you'll be, the nature of man is that we do not like competition. Even if you're working as a sales clerk, and the guy next to you is helping the business even better than you, and it's good for you, and he's nice to you, but he's your competition. Yes?
So women as well? The competition is the man thing, or it's mankind?
It seems mankind. It doesn't seem it's limited to men. So Shaul tells David, you know, my elder daughter Merav, I'll let you marry her, but I want you to be a successful warrior, fight on behalf of Hashem. And Shaul figures, if I'll get him to try and prove himself at war, so then he'll work extra hard, and that's how he'll get himself killed, which very often happens when we try to prove ourselves at something. Very often that's when we take extra risks, and that's when we make mistakes. It's one of the rules, even in investing. You want to go in? Don't go in trying to make the killing. They used to say, when I played baseball, they used to tell me, don't try to hit the home run. You could hit the home run if you didn't try for the home run. Yeah.
So this is after David slew.
Yeah.
And he already got Michal? He's already married?
No, he's not, no, not yet.
You got promised Michal. This is Merab, you said?
Right.
So two daughters?
Wait, we didn't get up to Michal yet. That's later in the story. We'll get there in a minute.
You promised Michal and Merab.
One second. Right now, Shaul offered him Merab.
Oh, Michal hasn't been mentioned.
Not yet. We haven't yet heard of Michal. So he tells him, I want you to lead and be successful at war. And David says, who am I? What am I worth? What's my family? I'm going to be the king's son-in-law. And they made an agreement. And the day came when David lived up to his agreement. And Merav didn't ask her father any questions. She didn't like the idea of being married to David. She went to a man named Adriel Mecholati, and she encouraged him, and he offered her to marry her, and she agreed, and she was old enough to get married without her father's consent, and with that she basically eloped. And what David sees is that he was promised Merav, and suddenly Merav is married to someone else.
Does Merav mean like from bad?
Could mean that, but it could also be from other roots. Could be May Rav. Not why would you say bad? I'm sorry. May Rav, not May Ra. May Rav. Could mean a lot of water, yeah. Yeah.
Merav married who?
Adriel.
They were in love, or she sort of get up being married today, couldn't go to the mother?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Very intriguing.
Right. Some of the commentaries say she just didn't like the idea of being married to David.
Wow.
Right.
That's
astounding. Put it, she myself.
Oh, yeah, right. So, Shaul's next daughter, Michal, she really likes David. And Shaul, they tell Shaul, you know, your daughter Michal is super interested in David. And he likes the idea. So the Shaul says to himself, this will be the route where of causing David's downfall. And he tells David, guess what? You can marry one of my two daughters today. So David says, thanks, but no thanks. He's been through the rigmarole once, and he's convinced that Shaul fooled him. So he basically says, no thank you. And he walks away from the conversation. Shaul, what?
Did after refuse the king?
Yeah, he doesn't have to marry. The king can't force him who to marry. So Shaul sees that David's not going to believe him a second time. So he tells his servants, speak to David, go to him in private and tell him the king really wants you as king, really wants you as a son-in-law. And don't think that he's the one who was up to it. Merav went out and got married on her own. It wasn't Shaul who was behind it. And he didn't have a choice. And all of his servants, they really like you, even the other generals, and you really have you're in the right position to get married and be part of the king's family. And David says, you guys think it's so simple to marry the king? I'm so poor. I'm a man that has no honors. Why would the king's daughter want me? No way. And when Shaul hears that, so he tells the servants, tell David that I'm not interested in a lot of money. I want a son-in-law who could bring me 100 foreskins from the Philistines to show that he's taken revenge from the king's enemies. And Shaul figures in order for David to get 100 foreskins, he's going to have to knock down 100 Philistines. So he figures this will be the way to knock David off his feet. So, that's a good question. It doesn't seem like it's only David. Because the Navi later says he did it with his men.
What would be the third day he gave them to kill 10,000?
Right, I don't know.
Wait, why did he want their foreskins?
I don't know. That's a sign you killed them. How else do you prove you killed
them?
You can take off their head, right? But this is, so this goes back to what we started discussing, that there's this recurring theme with the Philistines around foreskins, right? That's deserves to be expanded on. So David and his men go out. David likes the idea, and before the deadline, he shows up with 200 foreskins. He brings them on a platter to King Saul, right? And he realizes that this is unnatural in such a short period to be able to do it. So Shaul is even more scared. It doesn't tell us what the time period was. It just says before the time period. I don't know of a source that says how long it was. And with that, David marries Michal. Now, there was a big halachic question here. Because technically, Saul owed David a lot of money. Because Shaul had said that whoever kills Goliath would get a lot of riches from him. And he owed David all of that money. Now, at the wedding, he's going to give all that to Michal. With what is he engaging? With what is David getting engaged to Michal? With all the money that Shaul owes him, which now that he's married to Michal, he's going to say, you don't have to give me that money. Or all the foreskins he brought Shaul. So Shaul is marrying off his daughter who wants to marry David, and David is doing Kiddushin. And with this Kiddushin, so Shaul will no longer owe him the millions of dollars he owes him, and Shaul is receiving the foreskins, which have almost no value. Right? What could you use them as? Dog food, I'm saying, they have almost no value. Which one is Michal getting engaged with? With the foreskins? Or with all the money Shaul owes her?
What do you mean getting like
the sign? Kiddushin! You'll give your wife a wedding ring. But, so we have a halachi question in halacha. When a person is owed a lot of money, and he's going to receive something of minuscule value, which one does he mean to engage the girl with? Let's say the girl owes you $1 million and then you decide to marry her and you flip her a hot dog or you give her a nail cutter or something and you say, marry me.
A cracker box,
right? Cracker Jacks. Or the little ring that comes in the Cracker Jacks box, right? Okay, will you marry me? Sure I will. Okay. And with that, you know, I won't owe you the million, right? Right. Okay. He gives her the ring from the Cracker Jacks box. Which one did he mean to engage her with? Machlokas. David held, I meant to engage her with the foreskins. And that's why halachically David held that she was biblically married to him. Shaul held, David, there's no way he was thinking about the foreskins. He was thinking about the millions of dollars I owe him. That he's engaging her with that. And halachically, if you engage a girl with money that's on loan, the engagement is null and void. There has to be something of real value that passes hands. So according to David's thoughts, David was halachically married to Michal, and he's going to take her home and live with her.
But the foreskins are not worth anything.
Yes, they are. You could use them as, I said, they're almost worthless.
Okay.
They're good for dog food. They're valued at two shekel, five shekel. They have some value. You could use them as firewood. You have some use. Right.
Doesn't it say there that Shaul was halachically, technically in the right? Maybe I read that wrong.
Maybe. That's a machlokas there. So David meant to engage her with the foreskins. Shaul held that halachically she was never engaged to David. And that's why later on we're going to see that when David is on the run, Shaul takes Michal and gives her to someone else. He wouldn't do something that was biblically prohibited and the nation wouldn't let him get away with that. But halachically he held that he tricked David this time too. And so David thinks he's marrying Michal, and her father is playing along for the time being, but he holds they're not legally married.
Are you allowed to do that? Like,
that's another great question. We're even shorter on time than we were with your first one. So now we got to move forward. So Shaul starts talking to his servants, to the other generals, and his son Yonatan. We got to kill David. And Yonatan tells David, you know, my father wants to kill you. Go out and hide. And I'm going to try to talk to him. And I'll talk to him out in the field where you're hiding. and I'll talk about you to my father, and I'll see what he tells me. So Yonatan comes to Shaul and he says, my king, talks to his father, the king, don't sin with your servant David. For he's never done anything wrong to you. On the contrary, everything he's done is good for you. He risked his life and killed the Philistine. And look at how Hashem saved the people of Israel through him. Why should you sin spilling this clean blood and kill David for naught? And Shaul listens and swears, no, he won't be killed. So fine. Yonatan tells David. David comes back. And everything's fine. David goes out. Again, he has a tremendous victory. And again, Shaul has this bad spirit, and again David in his great humility comes in and plays the harp, and this time Shaul takes the spear to kill David, and David sees it coming, runs out of the room, runs away that night, and he goes home. He comes to his wife Michal. Shaul sends soldiers. They come to the door of the house, and he orders them in the morning, kill him. So David tells his wife, Michal tells David, if you don't get out of here tonight, by tomorrow morning you're dead. And she lets him out the window. You guys know of a Disney story like this, right? She lets him out the window. No, Aesop's Fables.
Rapunzel?
What's her name, Rapunzel? Yeah. Okay, she lets him out the window. And he runs. And she takes, because David was away from home a lot, he made her like a statue that looked like him. So whenever she'd miss him, like just like today, we take out a passport picture, you look to your wife. Good idea, guys. When you get married, somewhere in your wallet where no one else can see, you should have a picture of your wife when she was innocent, little, and sweet. So you could look at it. If you get a picture of her today, you know, you might get upset. Like when you're upset. But if you have a picture of her as like a three-year-old, like nice cuckoos or bangs or something. You should also have a current picture of her. But anyways, so this isn't my advice. This isn't my advice. This is advice we were given when we got married. Have two pictures of your wife, a current picture and one when she was three. So that way...
Did you ask her? You're like,
I didn't say I'd do it. I said it's a good advice that I got. So Shaul gets word that David... is home. His wife says he's sick in bed. And so Shaul sends messengers and he says, bring him in his bed, we'll kill him. So the soldiers come in, they come to lift the bed, and they suddenly see the figurine move, and they see it was there was a piece of goat's hair on top, and it was the little figurine David left his wife. So Shaul summons his daughter. And he says, what'd you trick me for? What'd you send my enemy away for? Now she figured the longer I detain them, the more of a chance my husband gets away. And Michal says, you married me off to a murderer. How could you do that, Dad? You know, he said he'd kill me. And what was I supposed to say? You left me in the house all these months with a guy like that? How could you do that to me, Dad? Women have a way of doing this, right? They turn the tables on you. And she says, you're blaming me, and what do you think about you? How'd you marry me off to him? A guy like that, you leave me with him so long? So, David runs away, and we're short on time, Binny.
Quick question. Why did she go with him?
Why didn't she go with him? Because it's very hard on the run.
Slow down.
Okay.
And anyway, would probably slow him down and risk her life. So David does what every good Jew does on the run. He runs to his Rebbe. He runs to Shmuel. And he tells him what's going on. And he spends that night with Shmuel at Nayot. What does it mean, at Nayot? It means he spent that night doing you know what. Right? You guys guessed it. He spent that night focused with Shmuel. How do we build a temple for God? Where is the chosen place? Shmuel, you're an old man. Who knows how much longer you're going to be with us? Let's sit down on the maps now so that the day will come when we have to build the temple for God. You anointed me as king. That's the next job a king has to do, to build the temple. So what does David sit down? His one night with his Rebbe. He's on the run for his life. And he spends the night learning Torah. He sits down with Shmuel. Opens up the textbooks. Opens up the maps. And they start looking over to figure out what did God mean in the Torah? Where is that hidden chosen place that the Torah never actually spells out? Where is that location to build the Temple Mount? 2 minutes, 2 minutes. Ah, you're just pointing. Okay. So Shaul gets word that David is up by Shmuel. And he sends his messengers to bring David before him. And Shmuel has all these students before him prophesying. And so Shaul's messengers, well, they get prophecy too. So when you're a prophet, you're not interested in listening to the king and having an innocent man executed. So Shaul gets word that his messengers, they ain't coming back. They got prophetic vision. So he sends a second group of messengers. And they too become prophets. And they stand there prophesying. They don't come back. And he sends a third group of messengers. And the same thing happens. And so poor Shaul, who hasn't had this feeling of closeness to Hashem in so long, he runs over there. When he hears this is what's happening, he wants a taste of it too. And he comes, and when he approaches, Hashem's spirit descends on him, and he too prophesies, and he approaches Nayot Barama, and he takes off all his royal clothing, and he stands before Shmuel, like all the prophets, for a day and a night he's prophesying. And obviously at that time he's not interested in doing anything to David. And David runs. And he comes to his best friend, Yonatan, and he tells him, what did I do? What's my sin? What does your father want from me? Why does he want me dead? And Yonatan says, no, you won't die. God, my father wouldn't do anything without talking to me first. Why wouldn't he tell me this? And David says, I swear, it's because your father knows that you like me. But let me tell you, I was a footstep from death the other day. And Yonatan says, tell me whatever you want, I'll do. So David says, look, tomorrow and the next day are Rosh Chodesh. They knew how to calculate the new month, right? Even the courts, when they'd look for the new moon, they knew the calculations. So David knows. He has the great tradition from Shmuel, that goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that goes back to Adam, how you figure out the cycle of the moon. And so he says, there are going to be 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. Ordinarily, the king has a Rosh Chodesh festive meal, and I sit next to him. Your father might ask, where am I? And you'll say, I asked you permission to go to a family event. We have a family celebration at this time of year every year. If your father says, okay, fine, so you'll know everything's good. But if he gets all upset, you'll know he wants me dead. Do me a favor. We made a pact between me and you. If I've done something wrong, kill me. You don't have to bring me to your father. Yonatan says, no, you don't need to die. You've done nothing wrong. And if there's anything bad that my father wants to do, I'll tell you. David says, but wait, your father will have you followed. How will you tell me? And Yonatan says, okay, I have a plan. And this is where we'll pick up Mizrachim next week.